affectionate.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I'm sure Harry
holds
her when she does that.
I don't know. We got one next door. Is not very affectionate. They leave him alone too much, and they made a surly dog out of him.
Yeah, I'll show you. How you hold him on his
leg. Oh, I see.
You hold him.
Vonda, get down. don't you just sit down and act like a dog? Huh?
Your ball is right over there beside you.
You're just a dog.
Thank you.
that all? Oh, he thought so.
So can you put that hot stuff out on here the same as the other? I believe it's the same as that.
No, I'll send you the money.
There's a hot plate on it.
Huh?
I haven't tested it.
We need a room to come out and test.
No.
That's what I mean, if she...
Oh, I see. Well, all right, Mike. Then you come in Friday and get it.
Cover them up.
Okay.
Oh.
much you gained that week.
It had 14 places to photograph the gold, the edges on the little pages as you turn.
Reaping
like that. Well, the real old fashioned ones, we got the placing on the front to write down each person's name and all that. And it retails at
$59.
Exactly, he was a little nervous. His emotions were like a mechanical
mechanical doll, you know. He lifted his sword up and it hit the side. And, gee, there was a riot. Jim was good. Jim Nance. Sir Phineas Scarecrow.
Oh, Scarecrow.
What was his name, though?
I think
they're
coffee.
Yeah,
English
coffee.
I usually don't drink coffee.
Jim Nance is very good.
It's a good app.
I'll take it.
Is that the washroom?
Yeah.
Yeah. Large room, I used
to. What do you want to begin with, Hank? The Scout story? Or the...
What do you want me to begin with? Wait, I'll finish my coffee. Maybe you want some new story, maybe. Or any story you want, I'll talk.
Or you can tell about the smallest cat loose in San Francisco. The story of our day, just today, would be a wonderful story, you know, that.
So,
huh?
Are we starting out?
Yeah, just beginning, Jake's moving.
All right.
She wants to get your
okay.
tinfoil.
Jake's moving, I mean, that was the saddest thing, all those guys moving all their little cans. And,
okay, yeah.
We moved a little capitalist today, my husband.
Yeah, Jake was
so
a
we ran his obituary. The obituary of Jake's. What does he call himself? The Duro Radiation Company?
Yeah,
radiator. Radiator? Did he have a radiation?
No, radiator.
What?
I feel like something.
Oh, that was sad.
Well,
he looked so sad, and all the mechanics.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And every old piece of scrap iron. Scrap iron makes me sad on what
it is. Yeah.
Spread.
It's funny about scrap iron, you know. That, you know, that's a funny thing in Faribault. You can come in on a Saturday right now.
Yeah.
And you can see bankers and lawyers. Some of the most outstanding solid citizens come into the junkyard and rummage these piles of junk. You know?
Yeah.
What it is about junk, I don't know. There's a lost fruit, they're touching a doll that reminds you of your childhood when you had half your days, and now that you're successful and you got to put on a bunch of phony airs and try to be somebody you really don't want to be.
When
you touch these toys, all these old things, it brings back some of the old happy days. You know, I think that's what it is.
Well, I'll never forget what you said that you felt about junk was that things that have been commodities all of a sudden were out of the market and how happy they felt.
Yeah, because the junk, a piece of junk is a it's not a dead thing. It's really a living thing. It's got character. You know, it's an old item that's been battered around. It's seen a lot of people. It's had a lot of experience. Think of toy, for example. It's passed through many hands. First, it was nice and shiny in the store.
Did you see that?
But it matures with age, you know.
Did you see that little Tunerville troll? It was lying in the dump heap.
Oh, did you notice it today?
Oh, I was
going to
bring it to Robin
and
just to show her how sad.
Oh, I didn't notice that.
Oh, we got Gears rocking horse down at the Goodwill.
Tell the sad story of Jake Schmel. Isn't it just bad to be
just like that? I want to tell you the whole story how we picked you started out from today.
Yeah.
Today was quite an interesting day. I called up Mother Fletcher of Minia Meridell, and she wanted to go out and junk. Of course, an auspicious occasion like that don't happen every day. I mean, every person wants to go out on a junk wagon, you know. Most of the people I have, I got to put them to work or something. And of course, Butch, my partner, he rode tandem. He rode in the rear, and he gave us the most unusual thing. I mean, most of the partners I had, they didn't last very long. Butch hardly ever would give up his space in the rear, in the front seat. But strangely enough, when Myrtle come in, he moved his rear over mighty quick, and he filled his place right in the middle. He was satisfied. Well, I picked Myrtle up in the house in the hill. She was standing there, one eye covered with a patch. She looked like she'd just come from some type of battle, or she'd come off for one of the old pirate ships and landed on Front Street in the 1890s or 1880s. She got in, she said she couldn't see. Well, that of course, it wasn't too much to look at the time. But she got in, and we went down. I had a job to move out Jake. Jake, the repairer. Jake is really everything happens to Jake. Originally, he had an auto repair shop on Post Locket. So the business was, if a customer would come in, Jake would be out getting coffee, and he'd lose a customer. If he wasn't out for coffee, no customer would come anyhow. And what happened was, one time he was going up the ramp in the garage, he backed out, he wrecked his damn car, and in that he hit another car at the same time. Well, anyhow, getting back to Jake. So Jake got a new building there on Hayes Street. So he told me 2 weeks ago he's going to move. Most of the time I go there, he generally has nothing, maybe 50, 60 pounds of die cast, a little tin, but Jake's a nice fellow, and he's a good company. I always good for a couple of little kibbits, you know, and a gags or two. So I go up to, we was up there, me and Myrtle sat in the cab, and I went to work. I flushed out a little scrap iron in most of the corners, and every time I turn around, Jake is carrying a can. So I load more scrap iron, I turn around, he's still carrying cans. Ask him where he's carrying them, he don't know, but he's carrying them. So I told Jake to put them behind the pole, and Jake put the cans behind the pole, and we loaded up, and we went down to unload in Lerner's junkyard. It was a beautiful day. It was the sun was shining so nice and fresh, and you know, it's Stanislavski was right when he says the basis of memory is a sense memory. It smells, the emotions and the thrills there. When you smell something, 20 years later, you can reflect upon it and experience the same thing that you went through 20 years before. It's a wonderful thing about the smells. Of course, there was a lot of smells where we went. Meredith will comment on the fact that she smelled a lot of unusual smells, and of course, it was nothing unusual for me because I smell them all the time. And besides, I don't think there was nothing profound in what she said, because the smell of cattle is a most natural, healthy smell and is very stimulating. Of course, Myrtle hasn't been around cattle lately, so we can understand that.
I didn't smell any cattle, only abattoirs, a dead cattle.
Oh, dead albatrosses. Oh, you didn't smell any cattle.
Swamps, and the fish, rotten fish.
You smell rotten fish. Well, of course.
And burning refuse.
Burning refuge. Refuse.
And the stinking swamps around there.
Oh, yeah, there are a few swamps. Not too many. Yeah, there are not too many swamps there, Mandel.
Oh, I've been reading in the paper between here and Oakland.
There are a lot of swamps.
They don't know what to do. The stink is so terrible.
Everything
has to leave.
Well, no, it isn't that bad. You've only got swamps in certain parts of the town. I don't. Along 3rd Street there, near the bridge there, you got a little swampy ground, but they're filling it in slowly but surely, you know.
I don't see why you don't have terrible diseases around here from that awful smell.
What awful smell?
From the swamps.
Was that a small smell?
Not today we didn't.
Oh, yeah?
There's one place where you go towards Palo Alto.
Oh, yeah?
It's just horrible.
Is that right? I never paid no special attention to that.
Then we came through the fish where they're making.
We went by the fish factory.
Stockyard.
Went by the stockyards, yeah.
And then the good smell of coffee.
Yeah, a good coffee smell. Yeah, that was on 18th Street.
American Can Co. We went by.
Yeah, American Can. Yeah. And talked to a number of people. First, we talked to the junk man, Mr. Hoffman.
Yeah.
He told us he was 72 years old. He was a coppersmith.
I didn't know who was paying who. A Yank was handing out more cigars.
Yeah, well, they're nickel cigars. Yeah, well, I work on the...
It was like traveling with Santa Claus.
Yeah, well, that's what I barter with, you see. I have such small customers, and they're too small to pay them in cash, and too little to give them cigars of any size, so I give them some little smaller gauge cigars, nickel ones, and that seems to satisfy them. Then around Christmas I gotta give them whiskey, you know. Most of the good ones, I got two lists. I got a whiskey list and a wine list. The good ones get whiskey, and the small customers get wine.
But do you get?
And if they blossom out, I take them off the wine list. Well, I get the stuff every year. I get every week. I pick up a little scrap, maybe 200-300 pounds from them. Mm-hmm.
So now we dumped the first load of tin.
When we sold the tin in a scrap iron, I sent a load to my two Negro friends, and we jested a bit, as I always do. And one of the Negro fellows who said that he didn't sleep well the previous evening, and I asked him what happened. I wanted to ask him, he had too much money in the bank. He was worrying about what happened, and he said, well, I think he said he was had been playing cards. And from there, I looked around. I know a yard. I didn't notice any of the old popular peddlers, more of the younger generation. There's a few old timers there. Hoffman with his assistant, or two old timers, and Hoffman is really he doesn't like to work too hard. He said so himself, and he spent most of his time around the Russian team on Turk and Fillmore.
We saw two old men, and they were at the end of a truck, and they had a big sledgehammer. And they were trying to separate some copper from some iron.
It was really a scene.
And they were pounding.
It was a screech. Fire. It was a screech, you see. for an immemorial scene you've seen through all the ages of the junk men, what they must have done, you know, through many years back, you know.
40 years he'd been a junkman.
Yeah, 45 years he'd been. I don't think he's ruptured. I don't think he worked that hard. But he was quite a character. He had about 30, 40 partners. And every time he'd go on a deal, before you know it, he winds up, he's got to go to the Russian tea room. And it seemed as a strange thing. He always found his way to the tea room. No matter what part of the city he was in, he'd always manage to maneuver so that the customer would be in that area, or that he was going toward the customer in the general area of the tea room. He was quite a guy. So he had a partner there. They were went and party with another guy called Sal Newman. And Sal had three, four brothers. They were all in the jungle. Sal was never too smart. He was low caliber on the brains. But he was a hard worker. And Hoffman likes to read a newspaper and smoke a cigar and watch the other guy work. So I remember many times he used to come in. One of the fellows that I go to, I pick up sheet tin from, told me that. Remember the time when Hoffman used to come in with a partner, and Sal Newman would be doing all the work, and Hoffman would be standing with a newspaper under his arm and smoking a cigar and looking, watching them lift the heavy barrels. So about 6 months ago, Sal hurt his back. So I come in the alley, and I seen they had a big piece of scrap iron to lift, and Mr. Hoffman didn't want to bend his back to lift nothing. So Sal says, give me a hand, Willie. He says, what do you mean lift? He says, I can do to bend my back, let alone lift it. So Sal got mad, and a while back, so Sal went ahead and lifted it himself, and he strained his back. And he could hardly straighten up, and he had to put a patch on his back, litmus plasters, and a bunch of chazarai. So I seen Sal limping to the alley there, and Hoffman was walking along. I says, what happened to Sal? He says, what do you mean? He just got a creak in his back. He's got constipation. So Sal heard. He says, I'll give you constipation. He says, you should be lifted like me. He says, at least you'll get a workout in your body. So shortly afterwards, they got in an argument. And it seemed like they were sorting some aluminum. And they were counting the pieces out, so who's going to get the share? And I think Hoffman favored himself with a few extra pieces of aluminum. So they came to blows right there and hit each other with the old sacks. They had a battle. They were striking each other with sacks loaded with paper. They broke up. They broke up that partnership. And shortly after that, he had a number of other people. He had a refugee there that couldn't speak English. He used to get everything backwards. He couldn't find any addresses in the city. He didn't know copper from brass. And there's such a thing as they have a certain kind of wire that looks like copper, but inside of it they have an iron core. So that if you buy that, you could, matter of fact, it doesn't even take the magnets. So it's possible to buy this irony copper for copper. Well, copper 15 months ago was 45 cents a pound. So what happens? This guy Goldberg goes out and Hoffman sends him out. So he sees a bunch of this wiry copper. It's worth the price of steel, a penny a pound. His eyes get as big as apples, and he figures he'll make a big strike and make a big impression, and Hoffman will be very proud of him. So for the copper, he pays 21 cents a pound for this irony copper, and he buys 300 pounds. So he gets back to the yard, and he brings the copper back, and he tells his Hoffman, he says, we made some money. He said, what'd you do? I bought copper for 21 cents a pound. He says, fine, it's wonderful, it's a good deal. He says, and I already figured out how much they made. They paid 21 cents, the market was 45. So they make 24 cents a pound of copper. He says, they'll make about $60, $70. They go over to the yard, they put the magnet on it, they put it on the shears, it turns out to be steel. So Hoffman says, what's the matter? He says, you learned, what's the matter, you ignorant fool? He says, what kind of sechel have you got? He says, you can't know that this is what they call irony copper? He says, how do I know? Copper's copper. It looks like copper, it feels like copper, and then it doesn't take the magnet. So that the big impression he made in his junk business was that he lost $100 for Hoffman. Next time I seen him, I was driving along, and he had two flat tires. He ran over a bunch of glass in the dump, and he cut a tire, a big chunk as big as a grapefruit, out of one of the tires. That went back to Hoffman. So I seen Hoffman, says, how you doing with the refugee? He says, Europe's a refugee. He says, I'm having nothing but grief from him, he says. He says, the first time he bought some irony copper, I lost $85. He gets in the dump. The ordinary job person has to take the regular road. He had to go on the wrong road. And he went over a big piece of glass. They ruined me a tire for $40. And he says he can't sort metal. He doesn't know one metal from another. So I said, going through the alley again, he got rid of the refugee. I see Hoffman a month later. His wife's nephew comes in from Chicago. He was in a small racket. He was a little bookie. So he puts him on the truck, and he's a very ignorant guy. He doesn't know. He doesn't know for metals. He doesn't know much of anything. And he's got a habit. He likes to. He's a little of a gunner, you know. So Hoffman has some steady customers. He's got a fairly good reputation. He sends him in. He tells him, Hoffman was sick one day. He says, Moish, go in there and I'll tell you what you want to do. You want to pick up so many wheels. So he goes in to pick up the wheels for Hoffman, his related, inverted related brother-in-law. So he picks up the wheels, so he gets a notion for nobody. He picks one and takes a jack along. So he gets back to me and Hoffman says, you pick up the wheel? Yeah, he says, hey boys, I fooled them plenty. I picked up a jack too. Hoffman, what do you mean you pulled up a jack? You're one of my best customers. He says, what are you trying to do? Do a big deal for me? He said, wind up because you lost all customer for Hoffman by stealing the jack. So his wife pleaded with him to keep him on. So he says, no, this guy got to go. He's no good. He's a bum. He says, you lost one of my best customers. He said, what will I do? I give him another chance. So he gave him another chance. He sent him out to another yard. He sent him out to an auction. He told him to bid on some scrap iron. So he can't, you know, that's, you know, bid when you gotta look at machinery, you gotta know what the stuff weighs. So he bid on machine.
What?
And it looked like iron, and it was wood that was painted. So he bought a piece of wood, a wooden machine, You paid $40 for a wooden machine. It wasn't worth a dime.
A wooden machine?
Yeah, made out of wood. It was one of these display things, and they had it painted over. So Hoffman is near the poor guy. Nearly had a nervous breakdown. I seen him. He had ulcers. He said, I got such a heartburn from me. He says, the relations and the partners. He says, I can't stand it. He says, it's getting so I can't even drink tea at the table anymore. He says, they drive me crazy. So finally, he rid himself of all the partners for a while, and he's been doing pretty fair now.
This was Hoffman we were talking to.
Yeah, he played the races. He played the horses too. Never wins, but he always plays.
So then we went back to the sepulcher of Jake.
I went back to Jake, and by this time, Jake was rounding up the different various paint cans. And he by this time knew what can had any liquid in and what didn't, and what was worth throwing away and what wasn't. And Hector, I don't know who Hector was, he never gave me nothing before, but all of a sudden something happened. He gave me a bunch of little small pieces of tin, and this happened to turn out that there were a few of them were brass, which was nice. So I loaded them all on. Did we mention the dump, Myrtle? Myrtle, did we mention the dump? The dump?
No.
You mentioned the dump?
Dump, yeah.
Oh, did we mention how we unloaded at the dump, huh? Yeah, and then we then we came back.
With the Negro woman,
yeah,
the wind was blowing. And
yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, and
then almost blown away.
Then we loaded up all the tin, and So Jake says to me, he's a nice guy, but everything happens to him. To another guy, the guy who has some luck with Jake, he never has no luck. He says, I fell down. He comes over, he says, you're holding your side. He says, I hurt myself. What's the matter now, Jake?
He could hardly walk today. He was holding his head.
Yeah, he was holding his head. What's the matter, Jake? I slipped. Another guy slips. He gets maybe a scratch. But Jake, he's got to get a scratch. He's got to get affected, you know? That's the way with him. So I give him $1. And then I added another $0.50. I felt sorry for him. I figured Jake ain't do much today. Besides, he don't feel good. He hurt his sides. So he won't be able to do much. So I give him $1.50. And then I was going to go away. But I thought that Hector gave me a lot of brass and a little ice. I figured, well, I gotta drive by Hector's garage. And he never gave me nothing before. And he gave me something now, which is the first time I ever got something from him in a year. And I might as well give him something because it'll make a good impression. And you never know, but he may, as I drive by someday on my way to Jake's, he's liable to flag me down and give me a few more pieces of brass. And after all, everything adds up, you see. So we loaded up, and then I took Maribel down to the main stem there on 9th Street, and we went into the bookshop, and we shopped around, and Maribel bought a few little books, and what's that guy's name there at the bookshop? Who played in the Cotswold? Oakton?
Colton, I think.
Yeah, Colton, he was there with his usual. Spry jumping around. He's quite a hustler too. He's a devil of a good salesman, you know.
Well, you like never got out of there,
no? No, yeah, we did. And we looked at. I bought the new mass. He sold me the new masses, the Jewish Life, and something on the Cosmos. Not the Cosmos, but Satellites. A little book about the satellites. I'm going to study up on the satellites. It's very interesting.
Oh, we forgot that we had lunch. And the Scotchman with the big blue eyes.
Oh, we had lunch at the Italians at Al Vella's place. We came in 11 o'clock, and I like to get in early because if you get in early, you're gonna have a good meal, and everybody's grabbing for the soup about that time, and you can't really digest your food. The cook makes a good soup. And
the waitress is from Pittsburgh, Kansas.
Yeah, the waitress is from Pittsburgh, Kansas, and who did we meet but Gene Wallace at the counter. Gene was my ex, he's an old friend of mine. I had him working on, he used to be one of the partners in that business before they went on the rocks. They had three partners there, and one was stealing from the other two. And
you mean this restaurant?
Yeah, and Al was, Al was the one who was left. He used to take the soup bowls, and he used to wash the people order soup. He used to wash the soup bowls quick and wipe them up, put the dishes away, and then he'd pocket the slips, and then take the cash. He was a good fellow, Henry. Oh, he's a real natural born rogue. And Al never had much use for. Well, Gene was a young chap, the Scotch chap I introduced to Merritt. Al Gene was a good kid, but he came under the vicious influence of Henry. Henry was a low-grade confidence man, and a stupid guy at that. Had a big mouth and his tongue was unhitched at both ends. Oh, how he could lie. He promised me some scrap rent about 6 months ago up in San Mateo. I don't forget the county, and I forget even where, well, I forgot the fact that he even told me, because I never got a piece of scrap from him. And then I mentioned the fact that the Black Watch had been in town. And Maribel enjoyed the soup. She came back for two or three encores, and there was a little soup on the bottom of the plate she dipped her bread in, which was unusual, but it was all right, as long as she enjoyed it. I hadn't seen that done for quite a while, and it amused me. Then she spilled the rest of the soup on my plate, and of course I had nothing to do but eat it. And then we had coffee, and then we chatted. She bought some cigarettes, and we walked out, and we came outside, and there was Butch. Of course, Butch was waiting for his lunch. Every time I buy him a little milk, a little can of milk, the little cardboard containers of 15-cent milk, and he wasn't very, very thirsty, Butch wasn't. He does that very often. He behaves that way quite often.
Oh, he was out with the boys last night.
Yeah, he was out with the bums last night, running wild in the park. So we left the milk there, and we took off.
That's Butch there. He hangs out there.
Yeah, he hangs around the corner near Nick's, the junk peddler's corner. Yeah, that's a favorite little corner there. I like it. It's kind of homespun around there, you know, friendly-like. And then every time After I make a little deal, I come back to the tavern and relax with a schnapps, and I look over my reports. I always carry a book with me, and all the junk peddlers laugh at me. They say, gee, he carries the only bookkeeper in the whole business. But I can't operate without a book. I got to keep track of it.
Nobody keeps a book?
No, most of them, all of them. There's no junk peddlers keep books.
Don't you have to pay income tax or anything?
Oh, some of them keep books, and I take a book with me, and I mark down every customer I go to, but a lot of them don't. Very few do. Hardly ever do.
Yankee even writes down the book when the sun rose.
I have three basic entries in the morning, the type of weather, and when I woke, what time, so I can bawl myself out if I get up late, and which I do. And I've got to overcome that habit. It's very bad. We're disciplined. And then what time I get on the street. I like to get on the street before 8 o'clock. So when the 8 o'clock whistle blows, I can move into action. But lately I've been coming out after 8 o'clock, and I don't like it. It kills your morale, you know. But those are the three entries. And then each customer I mark down, and I have any special remarks about the customer. I also add these little remarks. And then I also keep a diary. In the evening, so I can reflect back. Of course, I've been keeping the diary for 6 years, thanks to Maribel. She was the one who told me to discipline myself in doing this, and I see that it's a very good idea. But, want to say a few things, Beatrice?
He's trying to get me to do the same thing, Maribel.
Oh. Come on, Beatrice, you talk for a while. Get a minute. Get in front of the microphone.
Frankly, I'm not.
All right, don't
even
try.
Keep a diary?
Yeah.
No,
well,
trying to get Beatrice to write.
I've been wanting to write all my life, it seems, but I've never done it. I just think about it. I'll see something interesting or think of something, and that's the end of it. Sometimes I get a good idea, or I feel like I want to write to a newspaper and say something, and and I think I have a good point, but then I just feel, well, I won't express it right, so I just don't write. And Yank is trying to get me to overcome this. I don't think I'll ever be a great writer, but I feel that it is important to express yourself well and to at least do the minimum of writing effectively, as effective as you can. So I'm really trying to get over this bad habit.
If I could interrupt at this moment, I was just trying to impress on the fact that you don't travel a room in one movement, you know. It's short steps. In other words, if you can write two words one day, you know, write three words the next day, fine. You don't try to be literary, but you just keep writing. That's the way you got to do it. But you got to discipline yourself to mark down, even if you just say, the sun came out in the morning and the sun went down in the evening.
As a habit.
That's enough. And then you keep adding on that.
Yeah. So so your influence is being felt.
Well, just begin. You type, don't you?
No.
Well, maybe you should learn to type.
And
then just start asking about yourself.
If you go to that adult educational center, you can learn to type in about a month.
Where is this?
They have typing classes on in the high schools, you know, like.
Oh, yeah, that's true. I thought there was a special center. Oh, you mean any high school where they have evening courses?
Yeah. You learn to type.
Yeah, I may do that. I was planning to look into that.
It's fun going to school there. You know everybody is.
Yeah, I'm just starting to really do something about it. Well, it's just one of those things.
Is everybody
reading Spanish? Yes, that's right. She's going to one of the high schools near her home. But with us, it means two buses, you know, a change and so forth.
Well, they have extension, don't they? Maybe
they do.
They have it all over the city, don't they?
Yeah, it's just that I have to take two buses to go, but it's worth it.
You can go during the day, and you can get started. You don't have to go every time, because you can practice, do your lessons at home.
Yeah, I'm to go. I had some very, very interesting interesting experience in finding the apartment, which I had when I met Yank. It took me 1 year to find an apartment after my mother died. And the only way I got that was because the apartment was in such a bad state, and I agreed to fix it up. But it hadn't been painted for 10 years. And in New York at that time, anything that was moderately priced below $100, practically everybody had to pay under the table to get the apartment or had to know somebody. So I guess after 1 year of looking, I was very lucky to get it. And I was trying to paint it and fix it up myself, but I didn't have the money to work with it properly. So I had some man who was a handyman. One of the neighbors had recommended the building that he had washed the windows for her. And that he was able to do almost anything in the way of painting, repairing, sort of a general handyman. So I employed him at a very modest rate that he paint and help me fix my apartment. And about several days after he was employed and had done a very good job to date, I came home, found my at 5 o'clock after work, found my telephone cord was cut, knives were laying on a table. He had used nails, had made murals on my walls, some of my walls, and had nails, heavy nails that he had pounded in my walls, and he had a crazy look in his eyes. And I found an excuse to leave very quickly. Told him I had forgotten something in the hall and I'd be right back while he was talking to me. And I went out and spoke to the super and asked him to come upstairs and try and see what was wrong with this man. And the super came up and asked him why he did all this work. And he said, well, I'm an artist. And I'm creating a castle here. And finally we convinced him that I didn't want any more work done of this type, and told him that I would pay him and that he would leave. He picked up some of his tools and left, and I was left in despair. All the money that I had spent to try to fix the place was wasted, because there was probably $100 worth of damage done. And I later learned that he was in and out of psychopathic wards, that there were times when he could work well and times that he was insane. But of course, I didn't know all this. Neither did the woman who was kind enough to recommend him. So I was in a very worried state, and it was during that week that I had felt very blue, and my neighbors next door, who had me in very often for breakfast, Mr. and Mrs. Kramer, Sam Kramer, by the way, perhaps you know of him. He's over 70 years old. He's been in the theater for about 50 years, and has traveled all over the world. He had an act as a weightlifter, and he was considered the strong man of the period of perhaps 25, 30 years ago. Anyhow, he's well known in the physical culture field. And he's a wonderful person, and he and his wife used to have me in their home every Sunday morning for breakfast, and every evening they'd drop in, or I'd drop in their apartment, and we'd spend a little time together. So they knew I was very upset, and they suggested that I go to a party that they had noticed that was in the Guardian, which was in the neighborhood. And I'd been staying pretty close to home, trying to paint and fix my apartment up. And that particular night, I decided, well, perhaps they were right. I shouldn't hang around my apartment so much and get out. So I went to this party, and Yank was performing. We got to talking. In the process of the evening, he invited me to have a drink and then asked to walk me home. And at the door, we bid each other good night, and I just didn't think any more about it. Well, the next day I was over to the Jefferson School bookstore, and lo and behold, who do I see again but Yank Levine. And this time we got to talking, and I was telling him about the state of my apartment and how badly I felt. I was very upset that night, and I hated to go home because of the way my apartment looked. And he says, oh, I'll paint it for you. Oh, I said to him, never made it.